for antiwar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas, I'm Scott Horton, and this is Anti-War Radio. Iran. Is it Iraq Redux? It is, in the opinion of my next guest, Philip Giraldi, former CIA officer, founder and president of San Marco International and partner in Canestraro Associates. He told Philip Younger at Vanity Fair that this looks just like the run-up to the Iraq War to him. Phil?
Well, I basically told Craig that I thought that the pattern that we saw in the lead-up to Iraq is being repeated absolutely in every single way. I mean, you're starting out with the demonization of Iran through government spokesmen and through the media. Then you're starting to have stories leaked to people at the New York Times, such as occurred last week, and you're having government officials continuing with the pounding now with statements about Iran virtually every day.
Right, and you know, one part of this really is the I guess Scott Ritter wrote back in 2005 that it was being drawn up to look like it was Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C. Get the Europeans to handle the nuclear problem, get the UN to handle the nuclear problem, or then, if it really comes down to it, then you go to war. And what Ritter said then was, this is not Plan A, B, and C. This is step 1, 2, and 3.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I failed to mention that, yeah, the diplomacy side, of course, is part of the fraud that's taking place, and that the Bush administration is constantly saying that we're resorting to diplomacy, but it's not, because the Bush administration refuses to talk to Iran in any way. So there is no possible way out of this, because there is no dialogue going on, and the only option that eventually can be exercised is a military option.
And that is, once we accept the premise that America must prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons, I guess.
Well, that's the pretext, yeah. I mean, this is a fraud, too, because there are other countries that have nuclear weapons like India and Pakistan and North Korea, and we're not moving carrier groups off of their coast. This is essentially a red herring of the worst kind. The only reason why any country in the world should be going to war with another country is if there is a serious and sustained threat. You have to make the case that Iran represents a serious and sustained threat to the United States to even be entertaining the prospect of using military force.
Well, are they a threat to the United States?
Well, obviously, in my opinion, they're not. I would go basically on the consensus view of both the United Nations and the United States' own very expensive intelligence apparatus, which puts the capability of Iran to have a single nuclear weapon somewhere 5 to 10 years down the road, and that's assuming that they put maximum effort into the program and assuming that nothing is done to disrupt their efforts by denying them technologies and stuff like that, which most of the world seems inclined to be willing to do.
So it would take them that long, and that would be if they kicked out the IAEA and started trying now, which they can't do in the presence of the inspectors, right?
Well, I would argue that it's quite plausible that they have a secret weapons program, but it's not a weapons program that's like going full tilt to produce a weapon in the shortest time. I think this is maybe an underground program where they have diverted some technology and diverted some of their efforts. So I would not discount that. If I were Iran, living in the neighborhood that it is, and with threats of military action by the United States and Israel, I guess I would be looking to develop my own weapon too.
Well, when you talk to your friends that are still in the CIA, is that what they believe, that there is a secret program, and do they have any evidence of that?
Yeah, I would say that most intelligence officers who are following this issue believe that there is, in all likelihood, a secret nuclear program on the part of Iran. But that said, there is no hard evidence to indicate that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, just in December, the head of Mossad testified to the Knesset, as you say, that Iran is years and years away from the capability of producing a nuclear weapon.
Right. Israel's politicians have been, of course, like Bibi Netanyahu, have been sending the signal that Iran is only months away from a weapon, but this is a politically charged issue in an attempt to get the United States to act. The Israeli intelligence services, who are a lot more, I think, cold-blooded about this, realize that Iran is quite a ways away from having a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, well, all the British media reports that they're having all kinds of trouble even getting their laboratory experiments to work right.
That's right. I've heard that when they're the much touted towards the end of last year, the mounting of 66 centrifuges, I think it was, apparently 50 of them failed to work immediately.
Yeah. And back to the original question about the following the template for how you start one of these wars, the run-up to the Iran war looking just like the run-up to the Iraq war. Honestly, it reminds me of Waco, where basically we have you surrounded. The head guy is a really, really bad guy. He's bad to his own people. He's got illegal weapons, and we have to go in there and get him. Isn't that the same script?
Well, it's maybe the same mindset. I think there is... and this is not a Democrat or a Republican thing. This is both parties, obviously, because Waco was under a Democratic president. The fact is that in the United States, for various pathological reasons, there seems to be an inclination to want to resort to a solution that relies on force. This is perhaps something that's part of our society. I don't really know how to explain it.
Mm-hmm. And once you find a good template that works, as long as you feel like being violent, might as well, go with what you know is successful in the past.
Well, that's it. You create a sense of fear, and then you create a sense of threat, and then you respond with force, and you hope in some cases that provides a solution. But I think, as we've discovered, certainly in the international arena, it rarely does that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hillary Mann, who was on the National Security Council, is quoted in Newsweek yesterday as saying she believes that the program is to deliberately provoke an attack by Iran, make them hit us first so that we can call it defense and start our war.
Well, that's the Gulf of Tonkin formula. I suspect that there is some truth to that. If Seymour Hersh is correct in saying that the United States is running very aggressive attempts to get inside Iran using our own special forces and everything like that, I believe that the goal here might very well be to provoke an incident which could be perceived as justifying a military attack.
Well, and now if they did have, 50 hydrogen bombs, would you consider them a threat to the United States then?
Well, Russia had 3,000 hydrogen bombs. They definitely were a threat to the United States, but the fact is that it was a threat that we were able to manage by many means, astute diplomacy being one of them. And I don't see where, first of all, Iran doesn't have that capability, and secondly, I don't see where, just because a foreign country is a nuclear power, and we're going to see more of this in the next 50 years, why you can't manage the political landscape just as we did during the Cold War.
Truman and Eisenhower could have done a preemptive war against Russia before they got their hands on the atom bomb, right?
Yeah, they could have done that. Truman certainly could have. By the time Eisenhower was there, they already had it. But the fact is that, you could have made the argument that preemption was the way to go. And indeed, there were people like Curtis LeMay, as I recall, that did make that argument. But fortunately, wiser heads prevailed.
Yeah, I remember reading a quote of Ike Eisenhower saying, "You come to me talking about preventive war, you go fight it. I've seen war for real, and I don't want another one."
Yeah. In fact, you might argue that preventive war is the ultimate oxymoron. The people that are arguing now that you can have a surgical strike on Iran are quite frankly idiots. I mean, the fact is war has two parties, and what are we going to do? We're going to have our surgical strike and then say to Iran, "Hey, it's over now." I mean, Iran's not going to buy into that, and they can create all kinds of mischief around the world.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, let's go ahead and get into that. I want to get back to the OSP and the end run around the intelligence agencies and such. But since you brought it up right now, let's talk about the possible consequences. What could happen to the United States and to the world if we do initiate this war against Iran?
Well, this is one of the interesting things, and this also goes back to the intelligence question. We don't know that much about Iran and what's going on inside Iran and what the capabilities of Iran to attack us actually are. And going into a war situation, not knowing those things, it would be a very serious mistake. Just for starters, Iran. It's often been cited that Iran would have a very good shot at closing the Straits of Hormuz and virtually stopping all the oil from the Middle East going into the world market.
That's the gate of the Persian Gulf, basically.
Absolutely. I believe it's 18 miles wide or something like that, and it's well within the reach of the weapons that we know Iran has. So that's if you want $15 a gallon oil, or gasoline, that's certainly one way to go about it. Also, the Straits of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf in general are very shallow and narrow, and we would have major components of our navy there and extremely vulnerable to attack. So that's another thing. But there are lots and lots of scenarios. If I were an Iranian wanting to strike back at the United States, I could exercise. I could kill Pervez Musharraf in Pakistan and turn Pakistan into the next Islamic Republic armed with nuclear weapons. There are lots of things that can be done.
They also have advanced supersonic Chinese missiles for taking out ships with, don't they?
That's right, and they have some Russian and Chinese type cruise missiles, mostly Chinese, that would make our carriers in the Persian Gulf extremely vulnerable.
Now, what about Hamas or Hezbollah type operatives around Europe, Israel, the United States, and them mm-hmm. being activated?
Well, first of all, it's by no means certain that Iran really does control Hezbollah. I mean, it has influence over them, but it may not control them. But I think if Iran were attacked, Hezbollah would cooperate with Iran in unleashing its terrorist potential. It certainly has some capabilities in Europe, and it has limited capabilities in the United States. I believe that the FBI has been monitoring or has been alert to the presence of some Hezbollah cells in the United States, a couple of which are so short on money that they've been reduced to selling cigarettes without tax stamps to raise funds.
So I wish they'd come to my neighborhood.
Exactly. So this is something more like the mafia than it is a terrorist group, and the capability of these groups to actually carry out a terrorist act is unknown, but I would suspect it might not be very, very, very good.
Well, it seems to me that any doofus can take a SKS to the mall and start killing people, and you get a few people who are willing to do that in a few major cities in America, you could shut down our economy pretty quick, it seems like.
Yeah, actually, that's a fair comment, and also it's easy to make a suicide bomber's belt, which would have the same kind of effect. Not to underrate the threat. There are people here, one presumes, and where they are people that are ideologically committed to the struggle, and they could cause major damage, and as you say, they could shut down large parts of some of our cities.
Now, this is the one that to me is the most horrifying prospect, really, and also when I bring it up to people, I notice it's the one that is least believable to the average person, and that is that America could actually lose our entire army that's in Iraq right now. That our guys are surrounded by Shiites, and as Abdulaziz Hakim from the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution said when asked, he said, we will do our duty if America bombs Iran. And Muqtada al-Sadr has also said if America bombs Iran that he will go to war. And we got all our guys are basically dependent on one supply line from Kuwait to Baghdad through Shiite territory.
Yeah, this would be kind of like Rommel's, not Rommel's, but von Paulus's Sixth Army in Stalingrad, dependent on an air bridge to resupply it. That's very, very, very possible, and it has been pointed out by a number of military officers that supply line could be cut. There is one theory that I kind of am fond of, which is that one of the reasons for this surge is to get more troops into Iraq to protect that supply line and kind of seal the border with Iran. That's one theory as to why the surge is taking place. Because it's part of a longer plan to attack Iran.
Mm-hmm. Which really brings up the idea that invading Iraq at all was just part of a larger plan to attack Iran.
Well, that is, I think the people who are saying, based on the writings and the statements of the neocons, that this has been their plan all along, in addition to Syria, of course, it seems to me that that's a very powerful argument.
Yeah, and really, I mean, they've been making this case publicly, really, to the president, saying that if you just do Iraq, it doesn't work, that the program is you have to do the regime change in Syria and Iran as well, and then it'll be fine, which makes sense. That, you know, if I was, I don't know, Stephen Hadley or something, I guess I'd be telling the president, well, you've turned Iraq, or the vast majority of Iraq, over to the Iranians, but if you do a regime change in Iran, then it'll be okay.
I guess that might be the argument. I don't know if you saw over the weekend in Counterpunch, there was an article on how apparently the Israelis and the Syrians were extremely close to a final peace agreement, which would have been in everybody's interest in the area, but that the United States government intervened and told the Israelis that we didn't want an agreement, that we basically want regime change.
Now, you're talking about, I didn't see the article, you're talking about the talks that were taking place between Israel and Syria in the past few weeks?
That's right. Well, they were revealed in the past few weeks. They've been going on apparently for the past more than 2 years. And they had apparently reached a stage where virtually everything was agreed upon. But the United States came in at the last minute and basically vetoed the deal because we weren't happy with Israel making a peace agreement with Syria.
Why?
Because we want Syria to change its form of government or change its or to get Bashar Assad out of there. And this is all part of the...
Pardon me for being rational here, Phil, but it seems like if the problem is Assad and yet Assad is making himself not the problem anymore, that we could just go ahead and go with that.
Well, you might argue that Saddam Hussein made himself not the problem anymore either, in that he didn't have a weapons program or anything else, and yet we still attacked him.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are driving this are largely the neocons in Washington who need a real good reality check. And Israelis are starting to see, there's been stuff in the Israeli media, the Israelis are starting to see that this relationship with the United States is not necessarily a good thing anymore, that they are being pushed into things that are really not in their interest.
Yeah, and it's partisans of Israel in the United States. The neoconservatives seem to put Israel first a lot of the time, but they don't feel like following Israel's lead in this case. They're more hawkish than Olmert's government?
Well, Olmert's government, of course, is pretty hawkish. But there was an opinion poll, I believe, in Israel last week in which a majority of Israelis said that they do not want any conflict with Iran. They want a diplomatic solution to the problem. So this rather suggests to me that the people who believe they're acting for Israel in the United States are sometimes way out in front of actually what the Israelis themselves think.
Interesting. Now, going back to Iraq, rewinding a bit, Robert Dreyfus in The Nation and Julian Borger at The Guardian and others have reported that in the run-up to war, when Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby were having trouble getting the CIA to provide good enough lies to justify the war, that Ariel Sharon was having the same problem with the Mossad, and so they each created their own little office of special plans, one in Sharon's office and one in the Pentagon, and... I believe, according to Dreyfus's article, Agents of Influence in The Nation, that they were producing intelligence in English to be pipelined directly to Feith's guys at the Pentagon.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think, the one big disappointment about that Inspector General's report of last week was that basically there was no accountability. And it also seemed to me it didn't go far enough into looking into other sources of false information or falsified information that actually was funneled through Doug Feith's office. And you just cited one example. I would also throw in the Niger uranium forgeries as an issue that is not yet resolved. And I believe that that if the truth ever comes out on these various issues, we're going to find that these people like Doug Feith and Paul Wolfowitz and all the other cronies sitting in the Office of Special Plans were committing war crimes. They were fabricating information to justify a march to war or deliberately using information that they knew to be false.
And deliberately doing an end run around the CIA to stovepipe this intelligence.
Absolutely. The information would go straight from the Office of Special Plans. It went in two directions. It would go straight from the Office of Special Plans up to the Vice President's office and to the National Security Council, where Condoleezza Rice was asleep at the wheel. And it would also go to the media. Now, this is an interesting question because the stuff technically was classified information. And yet a whole lot of it wound up in various journalists, in the hands of various journalists at the Weekly Standard and places like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I saw the Colbert Report last night, and he did a whole thing about Doug Feith and how it wasn't the CIA's fault. The CIA told the truth, and so Feith and the guys at the, or mostly the truth, I guess, less the aluminum tubes. But Feith and the guys set up this thing to do an end run around them. And I thought, you know, this is great, but to paraphrase Karen Katowski, it's 2007. We've already been through years and years of it being explained to the American people that, well, the CIA blew it. We just had bad intelligence. And it was your old agency that took the rap for this whole thing, not the appointees in the Pentagon.
That's right. And there was more to it than that, even. In that these people saw the CIA as the enemy, and Dick Cheney saw them as the enemy, and they were not only marginalized in the process. The CIA was look at what's happened. We have a director of national intelligence now. The CIA has been effectively removed as the United States' primary intelligence organization, and this was done for political reasons.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dick Cheney, if I could be the devil's advocate, would say, hey, the CIA got it wrong about how advanced Iraq's nuclear program was after we found out at the end of the Gulf War. It was much further advanced than the CIA said, so he doesn't have any good reason to trust the CIA.
Well, Dick, you know, again, this is an issue of the CIA also got other things wrong in the past, like the so-called Soviet estimate about the Soviet economy and its military potential. But these are mistakes that are made in spite of the fact that you have a process, and the process exists because what you try to do is get rid of the bad information and consider the good information when you're shaping policy. So CIA and DIA and State Department intelligence, they have a very complicated bureaucratic structure that enables you to get rid of the bad information. That doesn't mean mistakes are still not going to be made. They are going to be made. But the fact is you try to minimize those mistakes. But in a process like that was set up by Doug Feith, you basically are taking the garbage and you're using that to justify a case. In this case, you're not working to find the truth. You're working to support an advocacy position, which in this case was going to war.
Now, your deep background piece for the latest issue of the American Conservative magazine reports that there's now an Iran-Syria policy and operations group.
Yeah.
Is this the new OSP, the Iranian Directorate?
Well, there are a couple of them, actually. This is the one that Abrams is the head of. It's kind of it's drawn from various components, from State Department, from CIA, from the Pentagon, and it's top secret, or it was top secret until it was revealed.